Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the third day of Tammuz. And today we have the great pleasure of introducing a new posek who I really almost never see having a date on his tshuvot. But this tshuva is dated to the third of Tammuz of Shin Ayin. Shin Ayin is the year 1610, and it's from the books of response called Mas'at Binyamin. So Mas'at Binyamin is by Rabbi Binyamin Aharon, the son of Avraham Salnik. He lived in Poland. He was born around 1550, passed away around 1620. So in 1610, he's around 60 years old. That will be relevant later on. He's a student of the Ramah, who wrote the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch that lead to Ashkenazic practice, and of the Maharshal. And he's considered a great Torah scholar, and he has 112 responsa in his book Mas'at Binyamin, first printed after his passing in 1633. So this is from Shut Mas'at Binyamin Siman Samach Bet, responsa number 62. And it's an interesting tshuva in the fact that it's extremely personal. He's openly personal about it. So he points out, he starts by saying, many people have discussed the issue of whether a suma, so a suma is an Aramaic word, and we often talk about a sagi nahor, somebody who's not able to see, somebody whose sight has gone away, can get an aliyah la Torah, can be called up to the Torah. So what's the problem? So we'll see the discussions, but just to make sure that we understand what we're talking about, when you get to the Torah, so we today have a Torah reader who reads it, and then we have a person standing there. What's that person standing there doing? So he is symbolically reading the Torah. The original practice was that person would read the Torah himself. And it changed when it came a time when people didn't know how to read the Torah. It was supposed to be, and some Sephardi communities still have this, where many, many people really know how to read the entire Torah. So they're just called up randomly on a random Shabbat. They could read their own Aliyah. But it got to the point where enough people, were unable to do so that we started appointing Baalei Kriya. So when you have a Baal Kriya, can somebody who's blind and can't see the Torah get an aliyah? So the Mas'at Binyamin is starting out by saying there are people on both sides. And then he says, Ha-me'aseif, the one who gathered and collected all of these things. Now remember, he's writing the Shuv in 1610. The Shulchan Aruch was written in 1565. Rabbi Yosef Karo was born in 1488, and he passed away in Tzfat in 1575. But I think that the Shulchan Aruch only came out in 1565. And then before that, the Beis Yosef had come out. The Mas'at Binyamin clearly has the Beis Yosef. To me, he has the Beis Yosef before, or more prominently in his thinking, than the Shulchan Aruch. He writes of Yosef Karo. So he calls him Diglei Ahaval Oro. I was thrilled about the light that I got from his works. Hamuflag B'doro, the exceptional one in his generation, Yosef Karo, in his Beis Yosef, gathered all the opinions. That's what the Beis Yosef does. Remember that the progress was that you had people writing their own books, and then the Rambam wrote a Mishnah Torah that was a legal code. You're looking for a legal code. The Tur, one of the sons of the Rush, wrote Rav Yaakov Balaturim, wrote the Tur, and that was supposed to be a digest. And he was supposed to be very, very brief. He sometimes quotes disputes, but he's by and large just telling you what the halacha is. And that eventually became the model for Rav Yosef Karo's later work, the Shulchan Aruch, which followed the exact order of the Tur. The Tur came up with that order that was new in his time. That was the Tur's innovation. And the Rav Yosef Karo, when he's writing his halachic work, built off of that and built it and wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Before he did that, the Tur was so brief, Rav Yosef Karo, in his Beit Yosef, cites and collects much of the argumentation that underlay the psak of the ruling of the Tur, meaning who held this way, who held that way, and that's on the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef, on this question of whether somebody who's no longer able to see can be called up to the Torah, he gathers all the opinions, and he, Rav Yosef Karo, understood that the majority and that the consensus should be that they're not allowed to. So this Mas'at Binyamin, Rav Avram, Rav Binyamin Aharon, I always know him just the Mas'at Binyamin, Rav Binyamin Aharon, Ben Rav Avraham, he says, I have to, even if it's Ruach HaMoshel, even if the ruler, meaning the Beis Yosef, the Rav Yosef Karo, became halakhically authoritative very quickly after his passing, very quickly in his lifetime after his passing, very quickly, so by 1610, he's the authority. So it would seem like he says, you can't do it. He can't do it. So Mas'at Binyamin says, I am Mekomcha al Tanach. You don't have to give up your own place. And I think I have what to say on this issue. So in other words, now you could find people who do this today as well, but much less common. But even though he's already telling us the Beis Yosef is widely accepted, he's still thinking, I can look into this issue. And if I find it, by the way, and I for a short period of time was looking at commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, and I forget which one there it was. I think it might have been the Beit Shmuel and Ezer, but But I noticed that in that early generation, they feel much more comfortable arguing with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, what an important work, and they're very respectful, but they think that sometimes the thrust of the sugya, that the consensus of the authorities, if you look into the discussion, really points in a different way. So that's an interesting phenomenon to have happen. So the Masai B'Yom is saying the same thing. He's the Shulchan Aruch, it's true. He's the Beis Yosef, it's true. But I think that I can look into it. And then he tells us why. He says, "Gizeh ata le'et ziknati chashchu ha'ra'ot ba'arubot." If the eyes are the windows of the soul, arubot are windows. If the eyes are the windows of the soul, I don't know if he's thinking of that phrase himself, but my eyes are no longer seeing. Which means, by the way, this tshuva, this response that was being written, that could be, he couldn't see standing up over a Torah, but if he had bent over and looked very carefully, that he could, it could be. But it sounds like he's pretty much not able to see, which would mean to imply that he was dictating this to somebody else, or it's unclear to me how you could be learning and writing a response. He doesn't tell us the answer to that. So he says, and then he gives, so that's one interesting personal note. Now, I personally, this is me, Gideon Rothstein speaking. If you don't like my personal additions, please feel free to email me, grothst@gmail.com. But I personally always wonder about those things because I think that there's supposed to be a certain amount of dispassion brought to the halachic discussion. If he's a nogeya badavar, if he is a personal stake in finding his conclusion, I wonder about that. Which doesn't mean it's wrong. It could be that he overcomes that in his analysis of sources. But we'll see that he gives us more reason to think that he sort of leans towards finding the answer that he wants. Because the next words he says, or not the next words, soon after that he says, according to the Beis Yosef's view, Yigarisheni milistapeach b'nachalat Hashem. That is a verse that comes from David HaMelech, when David HaMelech is complaining to Shaul about Shaul's persecuting him and chasing after him, and he was forced to flee outside of Eretz Israel. So David HaMelech says, Ki Gershuna Yomi Histapeach. I was wrong. He's complaining to Shaul about Shaul's oppressing him. He says, if Hashem did it, that's between me and Hashem. If Hashem convinced you to do it. If it's people who convince you to do it, they should be cursed by Hashem because they have kicked me from being part of the Jewish people. Now, in David HaMelech's case, that's because the reason why he's saying that is that he was forced to flee outside of Eretz Yisrael. And Gemara Ketubot is not in the response that we're dealing with. It's just on my mind when I ever see this source mentioned. Gemara Ketubot says that somebody who chooses to live outside of Eretz Yisrael is like they are worshipping idols, because, and then they quote this verse, that David HaMelech seems to view being forced to leave Eretz Yisrael as an example of being kicked out of Nachalat Hashem. So that's in terms of living in Eretz Yisrael and not living in Eretz Yisrael. But the Masad Binyamin is using that phrasing, Gershun, Yigarshin, Mistarech Nachalat Hashem, but not being able to get an aliyah. To me, that's also an interesting comment, or an interesting, it betrays an interesting assumption, right? It assumes, it takes for granted that not being able to get an aliyah is a huge problem for a person, for a Jew, and that it's being, as it were, kicked out of the proper service of Hashem. Now, in our times, this is a very sensitive issue, because then that would support, he's right in the 1600s, for him, these issues were not even at all relevant, but to me, they're relevant. That would support those women who say, well, you're not going to let us get aliyot, even though, you know, there's a Gemara that says that theoretically they could, but Chazal said they shouldn't, blah, 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 whatever that discussion is, and it's not here that we're having that discussion, but this Masad Binyamin attributes that kind of importance, meaning part of my response personally on those issues would always be to say, you're mischaracterizing what it means to get an aliyah. I think that getting aliyah is not such a vital central piece of what it means to be a religious Jew, but the Masad Binyamin clearly disagrees with me, and in those kinds of conversations, unless I can find others who agree with me, he would certainly win. So that's also an interesting ramification, but not really our issue. Our issue is, he wants to know, can those who are no longer able to see get aliyah? And therefore he says, I said to myself, I concluded, Chalila li mila azov et derech etz chayim. It's unthinkable to me to leave the path of life. Again, showing you that for him, being able to get aliyot was really crucial, and that being told he can get aliyah would be a tremendous problem for him. That to me, also, again, that's a warning sign, because most of us, Masai Pajama can easily be different, but most of us, when we have a dog in the fight, as it were, when it really matters to us, then it's not clear that we're going to look at the sources as they were. But he's going to try, we're going to see, he's going to do his best to do a good job on this. He says, before I'm going to tell you my halakha conclusion, I'm going to give you the opinions on both sides. So let's start with those who say it's prohibited. Now, he's starting, in other words, with the side that he doesn't like. He's trying to show you, or do for himself, he's trying to be clear that he's going to follow the sources where they take him and not let himself just come to his own conclusions that he wants. So he starts with the people who are prohibiting. The Rush in the beginning of Perek HaKorei, the Megillah, which is a Perek of Megillah, it talks about who could read what. And there the Rush says, Umashenogu, that we have this custom now that you have a Shliach Tzibor Korei. You have, we call him a Baal Kriya. You have somebody who's a representative of the community reading the Torah. And the reason we do that is to not embarrass those who don't know how to read the Torah on their own. And there's a Mishnah, a relevant Mishnah, where the Asheri, the Rush thinks, the way they got that idea, that practice arose based on a Mishnah regarding Bikurim. The Mishnah regarding Bikurim says, so the Torah tells us that when you bring Bikurim, you're supposed to be Korei. There's a whole ceremony you're supposed to do, and part of that, much of that ceremony is what we read Seder night as Arami Oved Avi. We start with Arami Oved Avi, but then we start with the Psukim of, the Psukim start, Arami Oved Avi. So those Psukim are part of the reading of Bikurim. So in the time of the Mishnah already, they tell us that there were those people who knew that by heart, and therefore could say it and could participate in the ceremony on their own, and they just walk up there and do it on their own. And there were people who couldn't. And the Mishnah tells us that there were people, the people who couldn't, started not bringing their Bikurim because they didn't want to be embarrassed because they'd get there. And it would turn out here they're coming trying to bring Bikurim and they're trying to do a good thing. And then they have to, everybody knows that they don't know what they're talking about. So there they made the takana was that you would always have somebody on the side reading it out to them, feeding it to them, as it were. It would be like, if at a wedding ceremony, we always feed the chassan, the groom, the words of Aram Kodesh, the words of the ceremony. So why do we do that? So there could be lots of reasons. It could be that most people don't know the words, so they want to make sure it goes right. But the Bikurim example is, we don't want people to feel bad, and especially because we're worried, they won't do it, they won't come, they won't participate. So if you had that same problem with reading the Torah, you'd have people wouldn't be willing to accept aliyot, meaning one option would have been to say, well, if I'm a person who doesn't know how to read the Torah and getting an aliyah requires me to read it, I would go off and do the work of making sure to know how to read at least that aliyah. You could give people advance notice and say, please learn your aliyah, and then you learn aliyah. But that's not the solution that came up in the 1100s. The Rosh Hashanah, the solution they came up with was to have a representative of the community read for everybody. That, by the way, means, if it's not in the tshuva, but it just side note that I think is interesting, that means that really it's wrong if somebody gets up to Aliyah. I've seen this happen. Somebody get an Aliyah and they say, I'd like to read my own Aliyah. So the Baal Kori is always going to let them do it. But it's a little wrong because the whole point of the Baal Kori, according to Rush, was that you didn't want to embarrass people who didn't know. But if it got to be, if you got to a situation, it's very rare today, so it's probably not a big, huge problem. But you got a situation where three or four people a week would say, I can read my own Aliyah. And the other people would say, no, you read it for me. You'd start getting to this problem again. So anyway, but the Rush is saying, they made a thing. So the Rush doesn't like that suggestion. I'm sorry. So when I said it before, as the Rush says it, the Rush says there are those who say that's the reason for it. The Rush says that can't be the reason for it, for exactly the reason I mentioned a moment ago. The Rush says, I don't understand. So if that's true, there's no, in other words, in the Bikurim case, they have to bring Bikurim. So if you have people refer you, not bring Bikurim because of the embarrassment of being caught not knowing how to say the parsha, the part of the Torah they're supposed to say, that's a terrible, unbelievable tragedy. But when it comes to reading the Torah, so let's not read the Torah, the Rush says. And it's interesting because that assumes exactly the opposite of what the Bas said. But Yamin assumed before, which was that it's very, very important that people should be able to read the Torah. It's like kicking them out of the Nachalat Hashem, out of the heritage of God, to tell them they can't read the Torah. So the Rush says, let them not read. And you know what? And if they can't read, out of embarrassment, they'll go and they'll learn how to read. Again, an interesting assumption, because in our times, I don't know what's true in the times of the Rush, the late 1200s, early 1300s, but in our times, it's not true that people out of embarrassment go and learn. They would just get insulted and go away. And that might be why the other people would say that's the way it works. And that might be why they thought Bikurim was an example. It wasn't that the two cases are exactly the same. It wasn't like the answer is, because of Bikurim. It's that Bikurim showed us a model of that we're afraid that people will let embarrassment over their ignorance lead to them being further distant, and sometimes we make accommodations to try to make them not further distant. It would be as if today we were to say to anyone who got an aliyah, you must read the brachot off of the sheet that we're putting out there. Many, many shuls have a paper that reads the brachot. If you don't know the brachot by heart, you know the blessing of the Torah by heart, you have it right there and you can read it off the blessing. So you could imagine, it could happen, there would become a time when people would be so embarrassed by having to be the ones who read it off, you'd say, everybody must read it off the sheet. That would be like what we're doing. So that's what this other side is saying. The Rush doesn't think any of that's true. He thinks, and this is one of those broad questions of how do we deal with X unfortunate situation. In our case, X unfortunate situation is that there are people who are ignorant, and whose ignorance embarrasses them, but will not lead to productive reaction to that embarrassment, to them improving and learning and growing. It'll lead to them distancing themselves, and we want to make accommodations for that. That the Rosh doesn't think is the strategy we would take. He thinks that no, the embarrassment will lead to productive engagement, and they will try to do their best. And therefore, he assumes, he thinks the issue is that the people don't know the right cantillation. They don't know the right notes. Now, many of us think of the notes as being, yeah, you have to read the notes of this. But many authorities held, and I once heard that Rabbi Soloveitchik held this way in practice, and that when he used to have a summer, he used to go to Onset and Cape Cod for the summers, and they'd have a minion in the house, I think, and they wouldn't always have an easy minion, but aside from the minion, they wouldn't always have a Baal Kori, and so the Rav had to read the Torah, and since he held that the Ta'amim were an obligation, and you had to read them the right way, which is what the Rosh is assuming here, he would have people feed it to him if he got it wrong, including the rumor, I think the story I once heard was, his daughters would have to feed him the notes if he got them wrong. So here you have a Rosh saying exactly that, that if you read the notes wrong, the Tzibur isn't Yotze, the mitzvah hasn't been fulfilled, the Kriyas HaTorah, the public Torah reading, has not gone the way it was supposed to, and therefore, it's a big problem. And the problem is not only that he'll do it wrong, it's that he doesn't know that he's doing it wrong. He thinks he knows what he's doing, right? So therefore, you have a guy who never reads the Torah right, you know, and it's unclear in the Rosh how many mistakes you can make before it's a problem, but you have a guy who doesn't read the Torah well, meaning he doesn't bother to sit down and make sure. That nowadays people say, oh, I can't do it. But there's no can't. They mean that I can't, but I'm not willing to put in the time to do it. But you'll have a guy, the Rush says, you would have a guy who didn't know how to read it well, knew how to read it, but didn't know how to read it well. He would read it poorly, or they would say, oh, you read it so badly, we're not willing to have you as a Baal Kore. He says, you're not going to give me an aliyah. How can you not give me an aliyah? I know what I'm doing. And you'll come to fighting. And that's why they institute a Baal Kriya. That's the Rush's view of how it happened. I'm not saying that's the right view. That's the Rush's view. Therefore, the Rush continues and says, that means, though, that the person getting the aliyah has to be able to read it as well, silently or not silently, but softly, so that other people don't hear it. And the Rosh says, because otherwise, it's a bracha levatala. You're making the bracha that you're making on the reading of the Torah, you have to read it yourself, otherwise it's a bracha levatala. And therefore, the Rosh says, if somebody really doesn't know how to read at all, meaning it's one thing to say he doesn't know the notes well and therefore wouldn't have called him up on his own to read on his own, but to say he can't read along with the Baal Kore, he doesn't even know how to read the words, then the Rosh says it's a bracha levatala, he can't do it. Meaning the Rosh's view is the person getting the aliyah has to be able to read the Torah himself from the Torah. It's true, he can follow along with the Baal Kore, and the Baal Kore can be the one who guides him in how to read the words, but he has to be able to read them himself, and if he can't read them, that doesn't mean he can't, and it's not good enough, let me say, I'm pretty sure that the Rush means, to repeat what he hears from the Baal Kore, but he doesn't see it, because that's reading it Baal Peh, that's reading it by heart. You have to be able to look in the words, see the words, be able to read them, and if not, he says the bracha levatala, it is a bracha made for no good reason. It's not being made on anything, and then the Rush says, and it doesn't make sense to say that he's making a bracha on the reading that the chazan is about to do. That will be a topic that we'll get to. The Rush just says it that way. The Rush also adds a proof, this is Tosefta, that talks about, let's say you have a shul where only one person knows how to read the Torah. The Tosefta says, he stands up and sits down seven times, even, you know, as many times as he needs to. Meaning, let's say there are three people know what they're doing. So let's say one gets an aliyah, the second is aliyah, third person is the last, only person left who knows what they're doing, he would get five more aliyot. Right? So the Rush says that was back then when in the times of the Mishnah, you used to have only two people would make a bracha on Birchas HaTorah. You wouldn't have every person getting an aliyah make a Birchas HaTorah. You'd have the first person make the first bracha, and the last person would make the final bracha, and everybody would make a bracha. They would just switch. Somebody would end a piece, and the next person would come up and end a piece. So the Rosh says, that's why you need the person to stand up and sit down, because you need to make it clear that he is replacing a different oleh. If he didn't sit down and then stand up again, right, not stand up, sit down, sit down and stand up again, then you wouldn't know that this is now another aliyah. But nowadays, says the Rush, where every person doesn't, or it might be the Tosefta already says that, but nowadays where every person makes a bracha on their own, they don't have to stand in between, they can just make the bracha over again. So the Rush says that's a proof of what I was written, why, of what I wrote before, that people don't know how to read, can't get an aliyah, because otherwise, and it's a bracha levatala if they do it, because otherwise, why do you have to have the person who knows how to read sit down and stand up, or get aliyot, let the person who doesn't know what they're doing, get the aliyah, they'll make the bracha, and the other person will read for them. Now, I think that proof is maybe not so strong, because you could have said at the time of the Tosefta, you didn't have this thing of a chazan reading for them. But in any case, that's a proof that the Rosh offers for this idea as well, that if somebody doesn't know how to read, they cannot. Now, doesn't know how is not so different from the Suma, from the person who has lost his sight, because he also cannot, and therefore, it's the same reasoning. The Rosh also has a responsum, 3:12, in which he says also, Ubor ein hagun, right? The person who doesn't know anything cannot get aliyot, because the mevareh, the person who's making the bracha, has to be able to read. So, in many ads, if he can read with the chazan, right, and he can make out the letters, right? Reading with the chazan, he doesn't have to understand, but he can read with the chazan such that he makes out the letters. So, that's the standard the Rosh has. Right, if the word is vayomer, it's not just that I can say the word vayomer when the chazan says vayomer, I have to be able to read the word vayomer in the Torah, then that's good enough. The Torah in Or Chaim 141 follows his father's opinion. The Rivash also thinks so, that you have to be able to read with the Shas. The Rivash is right around that same time. The Rosh moves to Spain in 1306. His son, Rav Yaakov Balaturim, his other son, Rehuda Balaturim, sadly passed away during the outbreak of the bubonic plague, of what historians assume was the bubonic plague in 1348, known as the Black Death. But okay, so that's around. Then the Rivash is later in that century. The Rivash has to flee Spain in 1391 during the riots. He goes to Algiers, I think, to Mallorca, and then to Algiers. But in any case, he lives at the late 14th century, early 15th century. So the Rivash also thought that you have to be able to read with the chazan, and you have to be able to read it from the book. And if not, then it's a bracha levatal, and you can't do it. The Avodraham quotes the Rosh, and then he brings a medrash that supports that idea. And the Avodraham says, and those people don't know how to read, and really can't read the letters, they can't get aliyot, and we have to stop them from getting aliyot. And so all of that is the Osrim. The people say it's not allowed. Then Masat Binyamin says, now let's look at the people who do allow it. So the Aguda says, well, there's no Kohen other than a Suma, a Kohen who's no longer able to see, right? If we always give the first aliyah to a Kohen, the only Kohen is somebody who can't see, so that he can call him up. Why? So the Aguda says, Kriyas Torah is a Durabanan, right? It's an institution of Chazal. It's not a Torah obligation. And therefore, they include it, and you're allowed to do that, and this is the way that it works. And if you're going to tell me it's a bracha levatala, the Aguda says, I don't understand. This is a bracha that's not made on the actual learning. The reason I say that is because everybody makes a bracha on learning Torah in the morning. And that bracha, we all assume, applies all day. So when this person, let's say a sighted person who can read, gets up and makes a bracha and creates a Torah, what's that bracha for? So that bracha is, we're creating a bracha, the Aguda is saying, basically, on the act of the Torah being read, and here it's no different. And that's the way the Aguda reads it. So the Aguda is saying, meaning the Rosh is saying the bracha is, maybe you're right, the bracha is on the public reading of the Torah, but the person making the bracha has to be doing reading of the Torah. And the Aguda is saying, no. You know, now that we see that the bracha is instituted where it wasn't really necessary, then it doesn't have to be the person who's making the bracha is the person who also does the reading. And if you're going to tell me you can't read Torah by heart, there's a principle in the Gemara that things that were written down, meaning the Torah, we're not allowed to say orally by heart without reading them from a book. And therefore you say this person who's not sighted is doing this. No, because he's not really reading, right? He's not. And the unsighted person is reading it all, the chazan is, the balkori is, and therefore that should be okay. So that's the aguda. That helps the Masa Binyamin's hope for a view that people who are not sighted can get aliyot. The Rukh Yosef quotes an Eshkol, Sefer Eshkol, and the Beis Yosef cites it as well, that we have a mission that says a suma can't read. So he says, sainu be'alpeh. But if you have another person who's going to stand there for the suma, for the blind person, the person who's not sighted, then the Eshkol held that that's fine. He and the Suma, the non-sighted person, can make the bracha as well. And Mahariel quotes the Mahari Segel, who says you can call not a non-sighted person, but a non-sighted person, or an Amaretz, a person who's completely unlearned and can't read it on his own, for these reasons as well. So you have people who are saying that you can do it. So the Masa B'Yamin quotes a few more sources, and he says, when you look at the Beis Yosef, when he quotes the people who prohibit it, he quotes all the people who I said who prohibit it, but when he quotes the Matirin, those who allow it, he only quotes the Nuka Yosef with the Sefer HaEshkol that we mentioned, and the Aguda. But there are others. The Masa B'Yamin's point is, and then the Beis Yosef said, and you can't rely on the Matirim, on those who allow it, because there's so many rabbis, so many scholars who say that you're not allowed to do it. So the Masid B'Yamin is saying, I don't know that he's implying, because you'll get to it later, I don't know that that's true, because you left out many of the sources that say that it's okay. But before he does that, he makes a very interesting aside that I think is productive, not only for this question, and he says, whenever anybody wants to paskin a halacha, right? And there's a debate about that halacha, what does the person do? The only way you can come to a conclusion is in one of three ways. One way is you find ironclad proofs in the Gemara or in the Gaonim, or in the earlier authorities, and you can say, for all that there are people who argued, he pauses to tell us that either you get proofs from the Gemara or the Gaonim, or you don't have a proof, but you can show that there's a majority, a real consensus. So he says, Rav Minyan, Rav Binyan. Rav Minyan, Rav Binyan. Rav Minyan is comes from elsewhere, but it means a majority in numbers and also in importance. Meaning, if I showed you, to pick random names, let's suppose I said the postgame of the major postgame of the 20th century, let's say there were Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Avraham Yosef, and the Tzitz Eliezer, and there are plenty of others I could add to that list, they all held X. And then I said, but 1,000, graduates of X rabbinical school, who are 22, 23, 24 years old, they all held Y. So it'd be an interesting question. We'd have to deal with it, but that's what Rav Binyan is. Rav Binyan is like a major authority. So if I can show that the majority of authorities in general and the majority of major authorities hold X way, that would be another way to decide the halacha. And then the third option is that we always pass them like Batra'i, Neged Kamoi. If you can make it a timing debate, if I could show you, this is a halakhic principle, it's not his. The Gemara says it after the time of Vayev Rava, halakhic Batra'i. So if I showed you that within the period of the Rishonim, in the 1100s, Rishonim passed this way, the 1200s, Rishonim passed this way, and then all of a sudden the 1300s, 1400s, they started passing the other way for whatever reason it is, we tend to assume that the halakha follows them for reasons that we can talk about another time, probably because something along the lines of they have the ability to look at those Rishonim, all their earlier opinions, and then if they came to a different conclusion, if they had all that factored in, therefore we would follow them. So the Masid B'Yamin is going to claim that on all of these scales, he thinks that people who don't have sight, and therefore also people who are ignorant and can't read, should be able to get aliyot. So first of all, he says, the Tosefta, the Rosh brought as a proof, he thinks is no proof, because it would be a bracha levatala for them as well, because he's getting up, he's just sitting down and standing up for no good reason, and he's making a bracha levatala. So he says, no, it's because in the time of the Tosefta, not everybody got made a bracha, and therefore there was no bracha levatala issue. Then why not have non-reading, non-learned people get up and to read? Just have the shots, right? The Baal Kori be the one who gets the first aliyah and the last aliyah to make the bracha, and then you wouldn't have the bracha levatala issue. So why would you do that? So the last question says, vadai, and I always think that word vadai, which means certainly, right? So whenever somebody says certainly, it means they're convinced of it, but I think history tells us, just by looking at so many different issues, that just because I'm convinced of something doesn't mean that others are convinced of it. But the Masid B'Yamin is convinced that the Tosefta just meant this is better, that it would be better. I'm sure the other one would be better. We better have other people get up and have the chazan read for them, and they would get up and sit down. But the Tanna was telling you that even if you're going to do it that way, you can. So I'm not sure that the Gemara has to be able to convince me on that issue, but it's not for us to judge, and I'm really running out of time today, but I want to get through the issue, so we'll leave that. But he thinks that the reading of the Tosefta does not follow what the Rosh said. I think it's a forced reading, but that's his claim. On the bracha levatala question, right, that you're making a bracha when you're not able to read yourself, either because you don't know how to read or because the person doesn't have their sight. So the Tosfos Rosh Hashanah pointed out that the whole idea of a bracha levatala, when you make a bracha and it's not on something you're about to do, he thinks that's derabbanan. Oh, bracha levatala is derabbanan, so that would lower the stakes here on the bracha levatala issue. But also, when it says that a suma is pater mihagada, right? That they don't have to read the Agada, and nobody says, of course they can't read the Agada because they can't make a bracha. So it sounds like, even though somebody isn't, I'm sorry, so if they're pater from the Agada, if they're not required to read the Agada, and they do it anyway, isn't that a bracha levatala? So they don't say that because if you choose to include yourself in an obligation, then you can't. So that's what they're doing there in the case of the Haggadah. So here too, he's saying, if I intend to do a mitzvah, if the non-sighted person intends to do a mitzvah by getting up and getting an aliyah, then that should be good enough to be considered part of the mitzvah, and therefore it's not a bracha levatala. Again, I'm not sure the logic works for me, because in the Haggadah case, the Summa may or may not be obligated to do it, the non-sighted person, but when they do it, they're able to do the actions, and those actions have halachic meaning. So when they make the brachot, it's because they're saying the Haggadah, and there's no halacha in Haggadah case in Seder night, they have to read it out of something. If somebody really knew the Haggadah by heart, there's no halacha, you have to read it from inside. You just have to say the words and have the experience. But in the case of Kriyas HaTorah, the Rush was claiming, and the Rush and those who went with him, the obligation is to read from the Torah. The person is not able to do it. And so the Masnevi Yonah is saying, well, they can insert themselves into the obligation. To me, it's not the strongest claim either. And the Masnevi Yonah says, and they wrote, that it can't be they make the bracha for the chazan, and the bracha is on the reading of the chazan. He says, and therefore they say, and if you can't read it yourself, the bracha is not going anything. So the best b'yadim here, it's a stronger claim. He says, well, what about Shomei Ka'one? Shomei Ka'one is a general halachic principle that's applied sometimes and not other times, and it's a complicated question that we're not going to be able to get into. But fundamentally says, if I hear somebody say something, it's like I'm saying it myself. So if the chazan's reading it out of the sefer, out of the book, out of the Torah scroll, and I'm listening carefully, even though I can't read myself, or even though this person who's reading, who's standing there, isn't sighted, it's like they're saying it themselves. Now, I think the Rush and those with him would have answered that it may be the Shomei Ka'oneh, but not, you can't say that the Shomei, the person hearing it, is like he's saying it out of the book, because he can't be saying it out of the book. A, he's not able to, and that's the reason he can't say it out of the book. No A, just no B, just A. So, but the Master Yonim's claim is not so weak in this instance to me, that no, that he can be listening to it, and since the Chaz is reading it out of the book, when he listens to it and hears it, it's as if he says it, it's as if he says it out of the book, and therefore the bracha is not a bracha levatala. Besides which, he says, the person who gets the aliyah, who's sighted and can read, can't really read it with the Chaz, and certainly not loud enough that anybody else can hear him, because we have a Gemara in Megillah that says that while Megillah can be read by two people at the same time, because people make sure to listen when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, when it comes to Torah reading, you can't have two people reading at the same time. So the Rush said, you're right, but that means the second person can't read it loudly. So the Masnevi Yonah pointed out that the Beis Yosef said that the Rush came up with that. We don't have any exact sources. So the Masnevi Yonah says, no, I think it means the second person doesn't have to read at all. Now, again, I think that he's got a stake in this, because if I say the second person doesn't have to read at all, it makes it easier to say that even a non-sighted person can be that second person, the person getting the aliyah. Then he says, this is so sad because I'm really running out of time. I really feel like I didn't waste time here on anything. But he says, and the Zohar says that it's not a problem. The person can get the aliyah, but that only one person should read it. And since only one person should read it, it sort of doesn't matter who that second person is, whether or not that second person could read it. And then Masnevi Yonah says, we rely on the Zohar a lot. He's got a lot of things in here that I can't get into fully, but he says, we rely on the Zohar a lot. And if, and when I talk about a majority of poskim, since the Zohar says it, I think he outweighs all sorts of other people. And therefore, he says, and even if everybody were to pass it against the Zohar, I would pass it like the Zohar. I think I think we pass it like the Zohar. So he's got this idea that he thinks the majority has done. He also thinks the later authorities, because you have the Marim, Mulin, and whoever it is, we won't get into it, but he thinks the later authorities support his view, and therefore he thinks it should be allowed. He says also, so in his view, he's got a proof of the Gemara, because he thinks Tosefta supports his view, not the Rush's view. He's got a majority, because he thinks the majority is the Rush, and the authorities that he mentioned, especially in the Zohar, agrees with that. So he thinks he's got a majority. He's got the later poskim as well. So he thinks in all ways it shows him. He also says, you know, I used to see in Russia when I was a kid that there were plenty of times where people couldn't read a lick. They couldn't read a letter. And they would get an aliyah. And all of my rabbis, all of my teachers saw it, and then we complained about it. So it seems to say that we, Paskin, that a completely ignorant person, by virtue of the fact that we have a Baal Kore, can get an aliyah. And then he closes again with the same, you know, heartfelt, emotional comment that, to me, shade the whole tshuva, because he says, I can't believe the people who prohibit it, they're going to cause people lifrok ol machut shamayim me'al hashem. They're taking the yoke of heaven off of these people. Now, the only way you can say that is if you've come to be so fully convinced that getting an aliyah is essential to the experience of experience ol machut shamayim, of having the yoke of heaven on you. And he says, in front of me, to a rabbah before seven, it's such a great, important, well-known mitzvah. And we, and our tradition is that we try to help people keep mitzvahs. So there's a few examples of where Chazal allowed or helped women keep mitzvahs. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, seems to have worn tefillin, and nobody complained about it. The wife of Yonah made aliyah l'regel, and she brought a korban, and they allowed it. And Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara allows women to put their hands on korbanot where they're generally not supposed to, and it's all for nachat ruach. So this all shows him that we have a strong halachic tendency to try to help people feel good about their observance, good about their religiosity. This is the Masnevi Yonah. I say very clearly that I could easily see people who are on certain sides of certain contemporary issues quoting these passages and saying, oh, you see what he held? And that's why he holds that it's got to be that I'm allowed to get Aliyot even though I can no longer see. And that is a response of the day. I went a little bit over, but I have on other days gone a little bit under. I hope this is okay. This is a response of the day for the third of Tammuz from 1610, from a long time ago. Maset b'yabin, on whether or not those who can't see and whether those who are ignorant can get Aliyot, can get be called up to the Torah. With thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, David Hakazer, for their help in getting these shiurim online. I bid you a good day.